The United States against Stanley F. Jackson, number 073226. Mr. Cook.
May it please the court. My name is Dan Cook. I'm an attorney with the Federal Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant, Stanley Jackson, in this appeal. There are two related issues in this appeal. First is whether the district court abused its discretion under 5G1.3C when it imposed Mr. Jackson's 170-month sentence consecutive to his undischarged four-year state sentences. And the related issue is whether the consecutive nature of this sentence is unreasonable under the 3553A factors. With respect to the first issue, there are two aspects to it, one procedural, one substantive. The procedural aspect is that the district court didn't do its job. Under 5G1.3, there are application notes, particularly 3A, various factors for the court to consider when it imposes either a consecutive or concurrent sentence. That was not done in this case. Essentially, what Judge Shabazz did in this case was tell Mr. Jackson he would receive a consecutive sentence because that's the way it works. Our position is under the guidelines, that's not the way it works. There are factors to consider. When the court does not consider those factors, it amounts to an abuse of discretion.
What happens if we agree with you and send it back?
Well, just if there's an agreement just on the procedural issue, then the court would have to consider those factors. I think it gets a little, your question is, could the court do the same thing?
Right.
I think it may be possible to justify this under, well, in light of the abuse of discretion standard. But with the paucity of case law on this subject, essentially I don't think this court has issued an opinion post-Booker, post the November 2003 amendments to this guideline on this guideline. So I think this court is riding on a clean slate here. So it's difficult to say that there could not have been an abuse of discretion in this case, I think, in light of the procedural errors and the lack of any direction by this court. So I think when we look at the facts of this case, essentially where Mr. Jackson has one conviction that is controlling his base offense level and the consecutive nature of his sentence. Because if we take away this 2001 conviction, he's not a career offender, and therefore his base offense level is 12 levels lower than what it is. And at that point, his guidelines range drops 100 months. And that same conviction is controlling the consecutive nature of his sentence because when he's on extended supervision on the state conviction, he commits the instant offense. So ultimately what we have is a guideline range that goes from 53 to 61 months to 155 to 188. And then with the consecutive aspect, we end up around 218 months. So basically, one conviction gets us from a high-end 61 months to a 218-month sentence. So our position is that under the standard in 5G1.3, which is to achieve a reasonable punishment for the instant offense, that it's not possible to issue a consecutive sentence and still achieve a reasonable punishment for this offense, the heroin distribution count in this that's before us. And that's basically because the guidelines range has gone up so much based on this one conviction being a part of the base offense level, not just the criminal history aspect of it. And there are also issues with the 3553A factors, and that goes to the second prong, of the second aspect of this appeal, the second issue. And again, that has to do with what the district court said. Essentially, the district court says, this is the way it works. You get a consecutive sentence, and it notes, in accordance with 5G1.3, the application note 3C, and that is the application note that provides a recommendation for consecutive sentences when the underlying offense is a supervision or probation revocation. Our position is that a mere recitation of that essentially is treating that aspect of the guidelines as mandatory, which the district court can't do. And I think that's highlighted by the fact that you have factors in the preceding application note that the court is directed to consider, but yet the court doesn't consider them. So at that point, that becomes a mandatory application of that guideline. Post-Booker, we know the court can't do that. So essentially, that is an abuse of discretion as well. And specifically with the 3553A factors, particularly what this does, the consecutive aspect of this sentence, essentially overstating the seriousness of the instant offense, which was distribution of, I think, with the relevant conduct, he came out at about 52 grams of heroin. Fails to provide a just punishment for the instant offense, and it overemphasizes Mr. Jackson's criminal history, and that has to do with the fact that this one conviction is controlling a lot of things. So the court doesn't have any questions. We'll just ask the court to vacate and remand Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Cook. Yep. I don't think there are any.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
We'll hear now from Mr. Droz for the government.
Mr. Cook, may it please the court. Peter Yarosh for the United States. Your Honor, this case really gets down to what happened below at the district court. What happened at the district court was that the defense attorney filed no objections to the pre-sentence report, came to the court, and then made a general argument where, broadly stating, look at Judge, you know, we think under the 3553A factors and under the guidelines for consecutive sentences, this shouldn't be consecutive. And the judge answered that in the broad way that it was put out. What the defense is doing here, and what's dependent on the defense's argument, is that there's some sort of parsing that needs to be done. In other words, what he's suggesting is that Judge Shabazz needs to say, okay, under 3553A factors, I'm now going to reiterate those, and that's what he did. He talked about the seriousness and nature of the offense, the fact that it was heroin, the amount that was dealing, the nature and circumstances of the defendant's character, talked about his past, his childhood, his abuse, his lack of parental models. But he also talked about the other factors under 3553A, where he talked about the need for deterrence, the protection of the community, the probability of the defendant recidivating. All of those factors were stated. So it would, what the defendant wants Judge Shabazz to do, because under 3584, Judge Shabazz is supposed to consider the 3553A factors in determining whether it's consecutive. So the defendant wants the Judge Shabazz to go, oh, now I'm going to decide the consecutive term, and I'm going to restate what I just said.
Well, how can we be sure the district court considered the relevant factors when it exercised discretion as it relates to the consecutive sentence? Is it your position that the district court need not provide any reasoning for why it imposes a consecutive sentence? I know he made that short, cryptic remark.
But the remark, the findings that he is saying, he is acknowledging the obligations under 5G 1.3. He states that in the sentencing on page 17, I think, of the sentencing transcript.
Yeah, I'm referring to that remark. You don't get a bonus in this court because you've engaged in more criminal activity than others. It doesn't work that way. I mean, that's the only reference made to the consecutive.
But that's what I'm saying. This was an argument below where the defense attorney is making the broad general argument about what the sentence should be, and Judge Shabazz is responding. We're really talking about the order of proof. The 3584 which allows the court the broad discretion whether to impose consecutive or concurrent or some combination of them. Judge Shabazz rejects it. He clearly states, I'm rejecting it. What the defense is complaining about is that Judge Shabazz didn't just at that point repeat all the 3553A factors. And he already said it. Because the 3584 ties in the 3553A factors, I'm not going to say it'd be silly, but it almost doesn't make any sense for Judge Shabazz to then come back and go, okay, well now I'm going to repeat what I just said. He clearly is saying he knows he has the discretion to give it to him or not. He knows you're asking for it. You're not getting it. That's what he's telling the defendant. Now, does he at that point need to say, and now I'm going to repeat what I just said? And that's really what I think is the crux of the defense argument here. They're saying, well, you know, the guy got convicted of a narcotics offense. He got convicted of two narcotics offenses, and they added six bail jumping offenses. Now, those bail jumping offenses, each one of those individual felonies, were bail jumping upon bail jumping. The Wisconsin state court's letting him out, and this guy can't accept the trust that the court's putting into him. So eventually he has now seven felonies that he's looking at with Judge Shabazz, and at that point, Judge Shabazz is saying, enough's enough. Now, there's no double counting because none of those things relate to the relevant conduct of the instant offense.
Suppose you didn't have the bail jumping offenses to rely upon. Would we then have a double counting problem here?
I don't think you do because...
Expand on that a little bit. That would be very helpful to me.
Absolutely. Under the guideline that we're working with, that 5G1.3, there's three parts of it. And the first part doesn't apply because that is instances where the person's imprisoned. If the person commits the offense on imprisonment, then they're saying it should be consecutive or it should be concurrent. And I might add this guideline under Platten. It's my understanding that this is not mandatory anyways, but I will go through it. Under Part B of 5G 3.1.3, that one deals with the one, and there's two conditions that need to be met. The conduct has to be relevant conduct to the instant offense, and the second part of it, it has to, and that it was a basis for the offense. So in other words, if it's relevant conduct, then it has to run concurrent. This wasn't relevant conduct. This isn't the classic situation of double counting, where a court under one guideline, because they've considered the offense level, then says, by definition, I'm now going to apply it to the next one, violent crime, and then I'm going to apply it to the next one. The judge had the discretion to do either one.
But wasn't he punished twice for the 2001 state conviction, first because it was used to qualify him as a career offender to raise the base offense level, and then it was also used for the consecutive sentence?
Well,
which is part of the same.
Well,
offense.
I'm saying it wasn't used. Neither under the guidelines nor under the facts was it used because it's not relevant conduct. It wasn't calculated in. It's used because there's a sentence that was imposed in that. But that's not the conduct that's being double counted. That's just the sentencing consideration that this court does all the time in other instances under the gun statutes and whatnot. This situation is one in which the defendant's conduct is not relevant conduct. In other words, that 2001 conviction is not relevant conduct to the 2006 action, and as such can't be considered to be double counting. It has the patina and the surface of it looking like it is because it seems like, well, the court's going to now give him consecutive time, discretionary, albeit not mandatory under any guideline provision, but discretionary. But the problem is that, let's assume hypothetically, and I know that the hypothetical was given to me that the six other convictions didn't exist, and I still don't think there would be double counting. But in this case, we do have six other convictions that are 4 years and that this sentence could run consecutive to those. So there's really no possible scenario where that could indeed be the situation. And there's no indication that the judge didn't do an adequate consideration of the 3553A factors. So under that scenario, it doesn't appear to be any sort of double counting. because it's not relevant conduct and not mandated by a mandatory guideline provision. If there are no further questions of the court, then I would simply ask that the judgment and conviction order be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Charles. How much time did Mr. Cook have? 3 minutes? Thank you.
On the what the district court said, I think government is right that the 3A, the application note 3A refers to 3584, which refers to 3553A. But it also, there are also other factors, and that has to do with the length, the type of the consecutive nature of the sentence, what court it came from. Was it a state court? Was it a federal court? How much time is the guy? Does he have left? How much is left to serve? So there's other factors. So just to say that we're somehow asking the court to consider the 3553A factors and then to consider the 3553A factors again is inaccurate because there are other things to consider. And with respect to that, the consecutive nature of the sentence is very different than the sentence itself. Judge Shabazz's comments repeatedly, if you read the transcript, it's only 14 pages long, he says, based on the 3553A factors, list some of them, you're entitled to a middle-of-the-range sentence. Well, that's different than saying you're entitled to a middle-of-the-range sentence plus another 4 years for this state, these state sentences. It's just different. On the bail jumping sentences, our position is, now in Wisconsin, bail jumping is just failure to comply with court conditions. So if you look at the PSR, essentially what it appears to have happened in this case is that Mr. Jackson, on the 2001 conviction, he isn't showing up for court, apparently, and he does it 6 times. So our position is that without the 2001 conviction, you don't get to the bail jumping convictions. So at the end of the day, it all derives from the one conviction, regardless if you consider the 6 bail jumping convictions or the extended supervision from the 2001 conviction. So end of the day, it all comes from that one conviction. That one conviction has already been used in the base offense level. And that's the important distinction, is that it was used because of the conviction. His base offense level went up 12 levels. It's not relevant conduct, we admit that, but it still controlled the base offense level. Therefore, because of that, it becomes excessive to give him a consecutive 4-year sentence on top of a 170-month sentence that comes from his career offender status on that conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. We thank both Mr. Cook and Mr. Giroux for their fine presentations, and we'll take this case under advisement.